Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we are back talking harm reduction, safer from harm, speaking of someone who should be put away for the sake of everybody's harm reduction. Martin.
Tony has let me out of the boot again. I just want to say, look, patrons, thanks very much for the new people that have signed up. Helps greatly. We want more. Please come along. Please.
Want more. We bloody well need more. We will be gone by the end of this quarter. I'm telling you. I am not paying out any more money. That's
so
the end of that.
Get on board. Become a patron. Go to the website. You'll find the links there. And just join us. Great project this. We're doing great work. Get on board.
Much more importantly, we're delighted to be rejoined in the Tortoise Shack by an old friend. I still think it's like three generations of Tony Duffin, CEO of Analiffy, is back in the shack. How are you, Tony?
I'm great, Tony. Thanks for having me back.
You have brought with you a special guest.
A good friend.
And I'm going to butcher his name. So it's Dan van der Goel. And I've really made a mess of that.
Yeah, totally.
Go on, you try, Martin.
van der Goel.
Well, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
Dan is the drug monitoring policy in the Netherlands, but he's also here as he's an invited guest of the European Correlation.
We're members of the Correlation Network, so the European Harm Reduction Network, and Dan's actually here for another reason. He's going to be talking to the Irish government and under the National Drug Strategy. There's a subgroup looking at things like drug checking and harm reduction, other harm reduction measures, and Dan's going to be talking to them, which is great, in the next couple of days.
Dan, thanks for coming. We have literally dragged you from a plane. Your luggage has been misplaced. So your experience of Dublin is not great so far. I promise you the night will get better.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me anyway.
Yeah, no, look, you do drug checking.
Yep.
Do you want to just give us an idea of what that actually means? Because we don't do that here at all.
I know. We do drug checking for, I think, close to 30 years. It's still innovative, though. And also in the Netherlands, we have now shifted from on-site drug checking to office-based. It means that we have 33 outlets at the moment where drug users can free of charge and anonymously have their drugs tested for contents. So we analyze their drugs so they know what they are going to take and we know what's on the market. So in two sentences, this is what we're doing. Drug checking for drug users free of charge. And it's not on site any longer.
So, because that's kind of like, that's pretty revolutionary, the idea when you say it.
30 years you've been doing it.
30 years, like, even more than 30 years. But, 30 years that we have been subsidized by the government. I have to say, we are fully subsidized by the Ministry of Health and we have their full support for all these years. But still, if you look at Europe or abroad, the number of drug checking services is increasing, but it's going slow. Mm-hmm. It's increasing though, and I'm very happy that also in Ireland now, it probably will happen that this year there will be some drug checking in any shape or form. We can talk all day about drug checking, but the main thing that, for us, it's two ways actually why we do this. The primary aim, and this is probably the reason why we're still being funded by the government largely, is that by doing drug checking, we monitor the market in illicit drugs. So we know what's on the market and we also can warn in case of extra risky drugs appearing on the market. It rarely happens, luckily, but if it happens, we are able to very quickly, very rapidly inform everyone who needs to be informed. And by doing so, we think we are able to get extra risky drugs off the market immediately. Because when we warn for a very specific tablet, ecstasy tablet, for instance, with a very specific logo, when it's on live TV, it's on news, anywhere in the media is there.
So you put, it's like an alert system.
Yes. But whenever you do that, it becomes, this specific tablet becomes insellable because nobody wants to buy and use a drug that could, that's legal. So this is one way, they monitor the market and illicit drugs. And obviously for harm, for drug users, we minimize harm. We reduce harm by informing them about what they're actually taking.
And just for my benefit, like this happens all year round. It's not just drug checking at festivals. It's all year round, which is really important.
It's very structured. We do it on a weekly basis. And to give you an idea about the numbers, last year we had an absolute record. We had close to 18,000 samples analyzed. 18,000, which means, you know, roughly around 200 per week. So, and this is all year long. You can see early months in of the year, it's slow, but then when the festival season opens, when we have former Queen's Day, now King's Day, there's a peak, and also there's another peak when we have Amsterdam Danzigvoort event in October. You can clearly see the peak in numbers of people attending our services and number of drugs checked. But on a general, last year we had 18,000 samples analyzed, which is really a lot. And this also enables us to get a clear picture of what's going on the market and to inform or warn whenever there's a need to.
In Ireland, we've had deaths due to what we call bad batches of drugs. We've had them. We've had direct deaths due to, and it'll take several deaths before a notice is issued that there is a bad drug out there. That's the only way to catch it, is several deaths.
Yeah.
What you're doing is catching it before anybody dies.
Exactly. Just to give you an example, which I always tell abroad, but it's a very clear example. Back in 2014, the end of 2014, we had in the Netherlands, we had in Amsterdam specifically, a very strange situation going on where a crazy guy was selling, he was mis-selling cocaine for white heroin. So people thought it was cocaine, but actually it was white heroin. Completely different effects and so on and so on. People died, and there was already a red alert going on, local red alert in Amsterdam for this specific substance. Then through our weekly services, we saw a tablet popping up in the shape of a Superman. It was pink, so it had this big S on it, in the shape of a Superman. And when we did our initial analysis, we thought it was strange, but because there was no color at all. Then we sent it to a laboratory, and when we received back the result 2-3 days later, it said clearly, you know, we get these messages through email, and I remember it was with big letters. They said, please take care. This tablet contains no MDMA at all, but instead it contains lethal doses of PMMA, paramethoxymethamphetamine. It's a substance similar to ecstasy, but more toxic. The effects take longer to have effect, but they will come. And so the chance of people overdosing because they think
it's not working.
Yeah, it's not working. So they take another one or two or three. It's working. And so, very risky substance. It was just right before the Christmas season, really days before. So when we got this result, immediately we thought, okay, what to do? And what we did was have a full-blown red alert campaign. So what we do is to inform the large public, not a specific public, but in this case, the large public. So I went with my face on all kinds of news stations and radio stations everywhere. And we did it on Friday. As a result, we never saw the tablet again. We never saw any incident related to the specific tablet. However, still days before Christmas in the UK, in the southern part of the UK, 4 or 5 people died after taking exactly the same substance. If you could prevent it or not, I'm not sure, but we had no problems with them, and at least in the UK, and later on that year, and still, but especially that year, throughout Europe, this specific tablet caused a lot of misery, and people died from it.
Yeah. Sorry, what year was that?
It was in 2014, into 2015.
Yeah. So in 2015, what happened in Ireland with PMA and PMMA was that we had a number of deaths associated to PMA. And then in response to that, we worked, collectively, with other agencies, with the HSE, et cetera, to produce, another, sort of health information to go out, you know, like, health promotion and harm reduction information went out. And that worked, you know, that helped to get people informed about this, the fact that when you took this, you took longer to come up, and it was more toxic, or it is more toxic at lower doses. And once people knew, then they could do something about it. You know, they could use harm reduction information to keep themselves safe, or not take it at all, or whatever. Yeah. So unfortunately, we had the situation was that we had to when we knew, because people had died and the toxicology reports come back, we knew that PMA was a problem. But your point is that
you can prevent it.
And the exact, you know, what we do is the exact words were something like, whatever you take, don't take this specific substance. Yeah. You know, it's a very targeted message. If you say don't use drugs, people say, okay.
No, I know. And we had to ask, when is ecstasy not ecstasy? Yeah. And the answer obviously was, when is PMA? Yeah, yeah. And then boom, into.
But you have structures in place. You have systems in place to get a warning out, and you work with the Ministry for Health.
Yeah.
You work with other government departments. Whereas Tony here, it's a much more difficult process to get a warning out.
There is a process. I mean, it would be unfair to say there wasn't a process. We just don't have that, this kind of regular checking where people come along and get their drugs tested. It's tested. So seizures are tested. Toxicology reports come back. There is, and it would be disingenuous of me to say there is a process. But, I suppose from a harm reductionist perspective, the process that Dan is explaining would be good.
Preventative, yours is reactive.
I want to put into context for what we talk about in Ireland a lot at the moment in terms of housing. We shout out to Threshold, who do homelessness prevention services, and because the majority of people are being made homeless out of the private rental system, but they step up and they stop it. And so if there's 3 families a day becoming homeless, there probably could be 9 if it wasn't for some of these, unfortunately. So what you're talking about is actually, you can't measure how many lives you've saved.
No.
You can't measure that. We can't know that. Mm. But we can kind of know that it's, if you're the Minister for Health coming in, it's obviously, it's a health issue. Mm. It's been monitored that way. It's not the criminal justice system, which is always what we talk about, separating that. And then the actual credit of how it's worked, in fairness to it, it must be value for money rather than have to, the misery of actual deaths.
Yeah, I mean, what people do, other people will say, you're encouraging drug use, supporting people to take drugs. And of course, we know as harm reductionists, we know that actually, if you have something that people want, like when you provide needle exchange for people who, inject drugs, people will come forward. They want it. They want what you have and then you build a relationship. And part of the work is to build that relationship. So you can engage with people. You can give them harm reduction messages. You can give them referrals. It's a meaningful relationship that you're creating, and that to me is the really important part, actually.
Yeah, you're right, Tony, because the drug checking is only a small part of the work that we do. The main part is this consultative talks we have with people who send in a sample, who submit the samples. Yeah. We never say in response to the question always asked, does it promote drug use? We never know. Probably it doesn't, but there's no hard evidence for that. But what we do know is that we usually, if there's any doubt, we advise people not to take the specific substance. Yeah. And although you can never know whether they will follow up on it, we do some research and it's self-reported and so on, but still we know from the UK, but also different other researches that when people get the message, whatever you take, don't take this substance because it contains this and this and this and this. Yeah. They are inclined to follow up on that advice, which is the best thing you can do.
Sure.
Do you find that the message, and it's a message we've heard lately here in Ireland about because we have sort of a gang war thing going on with drugs, tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. Has that any purchase in helping people at all?
The popular statements where people say, we are tough on crime, and if we're talking about sort of political parties making those statements at this particular point in time, and we've got an election coming up, it doesn't. I mean, the guards are tough on crime.
It's as simple as that.
They are always tough on crime. And, that kind of rhetoric is just political rhetoric. That's what it is. But I think, I've always maintained that the drug problem is the response to it is a law enforcement and public health response. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not straightforward. It's nuanced. We have prohibition, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about safer from harm a lot and the idea of decriminalization of drugs for personal use, because it is a health issue with the health risks and you need that. Then you have people talking about legalization of drugs, which would be a quantum leap for Ireland. And quite polarizing, that discussion. You know, it really does get people into their camps and say, no, prohibition. And yet, of course, we've had 43 years of prohibition in Ireland, and it hasn't worked. So you can have your debates about legalization all you like, but really the middle ground, the response where drugs remain illegal, but you have a health-led response to possession of drugs. That's where we're going, like in Ireland. That will happen. And government made a statement. I would say that, you know, ideally, people will get every opportunity, and not just one opportunity.
The policy now will be one go. You'll have one. If you're caught with possession, you'll get a referral to
a health assessment, and that's great. That is great.
It's a good start.
It is, but you know, we do, like, you know, if it's a health issue the first time, it's a health issue the 100th time. I was talking to Lynn Rowan there the other day, and she was contemplating the proposed policy, and she was saying so someone gets caught. And they get an intervention, a health intervention, and they're able to comply. That's great. But then they get caught again and again and again because they actually have a problem with drugs. Yeah. Now they're going to court. Mm. So she was saying to me, drug use is a crime. Sorry, drug use is a health issue, but addiction is a crime.
And I mean,
it's very well put.
Drugs come in and out of fashion. I read recently that heroin use amongst young people in Ireland has decreased significantly, but it's not that drug use has decreased significantly. No. It's just been replaced by other drugs.
Something else. Yeah.
In 30 years, you must have seen drugs come and go.
Of course. We also see different laws come and go. But what the bottom line of our work is that it's pragmatic. We believe in a pragmatic approach, whether it's drug checking or drug consumption rooms, which is another sensitive issue. We see that it works, you know, and once it works, you see that the general public is okay with that. Before, they said, no, we don't want to have it, but then we have drug consumption rooms. The problem is going off the streets. People can use drugs in a hygienic way, and all set, basically. What I also think, you know, in response to what Tony just said, is that, you know, we believe strongly in the fact that, you know, that whenever, as long as there's demand, the supply will follow. So you can prohibit whatever you like to prohibit. If the demand for that specific drug will stay, it will happen. You know, so there is, supply is always, I don't know, probably you have to do it from a law enforcement perspective, but it will not lead to people using less drugs. They may be using different drugs or different drugs in a more harmful way. This is not the approach that we are looking for. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you heard, in Ireland we did for one day.
Yeah, I heard. 2015, that was, wasn't it?
It just goes to show that legislation is a slower process.
Yeah.
Whereas you're more elastic. You can adapt very quickly.
It's true. Just to give you another example, this afternoon when I came from the airport here, I was talking to the cab driver about homelessness. He said it's a big issue in your upcoming elections. And I said, well, we had this issue as well. You know, and I'm in Ireland quite often. And every time I'm here in Dublin, it strikes me that the difference between Dublin, for instance, and Rotterdam, where I live, or Amsterdam, is that we have the same kind of drug problems. But in my country, in Rotterdam, it was very visible. Mm. You know, in the 20 years ago, 15 years ago, it has gone off the street almost completely. And why? Because we installed hostels. It's pensions. It's sort of houses where users live. They are registered within the treatment system or not, but usually they are. They give all their benefit, the state benefit, to the institution that cares for them. So they provide them with the rent and some food and all that stuff. And on top of them, they are allowed to use drugs in their own small room under specific conditions, but they are allowed to do that. And since they are allowed to do that, they're not using in the streets any longer.
That's a very clever
idea. And even more,
idea.
They're not using the drug consumption rooms any longer because they have, nobody wants to use any drug consumption room with other people. It's, you know, we call it a necessary evil. Mm. You know, it's evil because it takes a problem off the streets and it's hidden and so on. But it's necessary because, you know, there's no alternative. But these hostels really contributed largely to, a win-win situation.
Stability.
Stability. people are happy, you know, the problems off the streets, because, you know, of course, living in an urban area, it could be very annoying to have all these drug users living in, you know, and using drugs and shitting everywhere, you know, day and night. We seem to have solved it somehow. It's not perfect still, but it's, again, it's pragmatic. If a specific people, a group of people, they will use drugs until they die, you know, they can become 70, 80 years of age. And then we think, let's do that in a most human way possible.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, we definitely have a problem with homelessness, and everybody knows that. Yeah. And we definitely have a problem with drugs. Everybody knows that. It's not all doom and gloom in Ireland. We do a lot of good work as well. It's fair to say. And that different jurisdictions, do well at some things and not well at others. So I was talking to a colleague in Bogota in Colombia recently, and they were telling to me how they don't have needle exchange. I mean, needle exchange, World Health Organization are very, very clear. Yeah. You know, that's how you reduce bloodborne viruses spreading, you know, HIV, hepatitis C, etc., and reduce other harms. But they do have drug checking in Bogota, right? Mm. I was like, oh, okay. So, but we have needle exchange, and we can always have more, but we have a good level of needle exchange in, so it's just trying to give you an example of how harm reduction interventions, can differ between different jurisdictions, and we can always do better in Ireland.
But I'm reminded of when we had Nuno Capaz in, and we said the Lisbon model, and he nearly kicked me in the shins, all 8 foot of him, because he said, you can't just pick up that model and drop it somewhere else. No. You have to, it has to be
adapted.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And but some of the best practices, for want of, if we want to go down that business speak language, we have to steal the best practices.
No, that's true. And to make the small bridge to the European Harm Reduction Network, in this framework, this correlation European Harm Reduction Network, we collect best practices from throughout Europe, and we share it with each other, and we help each other to adapt it to the local or national situations, because this is the way to move forward. Yeah. What we have done in the Netherlands works quite well for us, but it surely would not work in Ireland if you would put it here. It's for sure it would not work, because I have sort of a little bit different cultures, but we're here just to help each other.
And I do want to ask, though, because I think it's quite important, when you mentioned the people who are off the streets, whether it's drug consumption rooms or it's these, you know, on-door accommodation. Yeah. Do you know, is there any evidence to say that these people are now, you know, are they members of society now more? Like, because we find that some of these people who have problematic drug use, that some of them will actually then find, you know, we spoke to Nuno, and he said people then, maybe on the third, fifth, or tenth time, they'll say, actually, I want to get help, and I want to, you know, and then we find that they're you know, holding down a job, or they're doing whatever else.
Yeah, it happens. We don't have evidence for that, maybe from drug consumption rooms, but it's not the primary aim, you know. It's the same with drug checking. If you know, you have to be very clear in why you do the things you do. When it comes to hostels, these pensions, or drug consumption rooms, the primary aim is not to get people off drugs. You know, then people have to go in treatment. Sure. Mm. But it could lead to help, because it could be the first step. But first, it's all about accepting the fact that people, basically everyone in the world, needs drugs, whether it's legal drugs or illegal drugs. Mm. Everyone needs specific drugs. Who are we to blame a specific group of people because they use a specific sort of drugs?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a very good idea. It's all about acceptance of the fact that people use drugs. And this is the starting point. They have the responsibility, as a drug user, you have your responsibility, but also as a society, you have your responsibility as well to take care of those people.
In Ireland, particularly in the last couple of days, we've had a kind of a rhetoric that is appealing to middle class drug users to stop using drugs, that they are fueling the drugs trade. That's going to fall on deaf ears. Uh-huh. We kind of know it's going to fall on deaf ears. Has that message worked anywhere in the world?
Well, they're trying to do it in the Netherlands, and it has failed until now. Mm-hmm. The same thing, you know, that do you know that if you use cocaine, that you are also enabling the system in South America, with the farmers and so on. And it doesn't work, because, you know, it's like people comparing apples with pears.
People don't think that they are doing like that they are adding to it personally. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing.
It's hilarious to say that. I know it's not, but it is the same. You could make the same argument that I have an iPhone in my hand, and you can say, where did the screen for that made?
Yeah.
Who you know, all of these things. Who mined the ore that what goes into your devices? All of those things in a capitalist system, because the drug market is a capitalist system.
It's a black market. It is. I think it's one of those messages that people feel they have to make, you know, and has to go out. The truth is that if you, from my perspective anyway, from a harm reduction perspective, you need to focus on risk, and you need to talk to people as adults, and you need to talk to them about the harm that they're going to do to themselves, and that they should make healthier choices, you know, in life, you know, as we all should, right? Healthier choices. That doesn't mean that you should stop taking drugs. You know, it's safer not to take drugs, you know, but you do need to know the harms that are going to happen. And that will have more impact on people, I think.
But, and you too, Tony, you're face up in the areas where drugs are most prevalent, where the sale of drugs are most prevalent. It's also the case that if you come from a very, very deprived area, that the only opportunity out of that area is dealing drugs. Now, and we get the argument, not everybody who comes from a deprived area deals drugs. And I get that. But when you're face up with these areas.
That's true.
If there's a choice for a young fella, and he's looking at the bling bling that's going on all around him, and he has no access to that bling bling, he has no access to that lifestyle, dealing drugs becomes the easy option. And when I hear the middle class thing about, you know, you are fueling this, I think to myself, if the guy decides to stay on the straight and narrow and not deal drugs, he runs a risk of being homeless on the street because he has no education, he has no support, he has no backup. So you are saying to him, when you're on the street, homeless will step over you. If you're a drug dealer, we'll blame you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more societal ill than an individual ill.
So I go back to the law enforcement and public health approach, whereby, and the state does have this approach, where you go down and, of course, the guards will enforce the law around you know, dealing. Mm. And then you've got agencies like Analiffy who are engaging with people who are, you know, some people that deal, low-level dealers have health issues and social issues themselves. And you need to get to know them. And you need to get to find out what these issues are. You need to get in underneath them. You need to help them to set goals and address them. I know it doesn't sound too sort of exciting or anything, but that's what you need to do. And we do that work, and as do other agencies that we work closely with. And that's where you get the change happening. So that's where you get people, you know, moving away from things. I mean, yes, money is very attractive, but the violence that comes with the drugs market is regardless is very, very scary, you know, and it's.
There are economic studies into it. I don't know if you remember that one of the famous books for economics said that there was accounts kept on two of the major drug gangs in Chicago, and the average guy on the street corner was making less than minimum wage.
That's right.
Yeah, that was for economics. That was
It's not a way to access to cash and cars. They're not all going to end up with a villa in.
I did see recently, and it was only kind of 24 hours ago, that they were saying if you see a 10-year-old with a Gucci hat and you know, expensive clobber, that there should be some intervention at that stage. You know, but you've missed the boat at that stage.
Yeah.
In terms of the drug testing, this is something that we're looking to do here, Tony.
Yeah, the government has a national drug strategy. Within that national drug strategy, there are subgroups looking at different bits of work. And one of them is looking at harm reduction interventions for people who use drugs. And again, obviously, drug checking is part of that. So there's a process ongoing. They're working on it. There's a group that are meeting. It's got justice on there. It's got health. It's got civil society representatives. Dan's going to be presenting to them in the next day or so. And I hope that what comes out of that is that we get drug checking, ideally front of house. I mean, I think they're looking at festivals particularly. That's why I was kind of making the point that Dan's work goes all the year long. But hopefully we'll get a really good model, you know, one that gives us real meaningful early warning in terms of any kind of further dangers around drugs, what people call bad batches. Let's hope we get there.
It's a very positive development for a country that has so long just said war on drugs.
If you look back to 2017 when the National Drug Strategy was launched, it was quite different in many ways from the previous drug strategy. Drug consumption rooms are in there. Looking at drug checking is in there. Obviously, we need to move beyond looking at things. We need to implement them. Mm. And hopefully we'll have the first supervised injection facility in Ireland soon with Merchants Quay when they get it open.
I'm touching wood here.
Yeah. And then let's see what the group comes back with. But I would advocate for, certainly at festivals, ideally front of house checking where people, because we've run festival welfare services at different festivals in Ireland, and people do come over and say, is this where I get my drugs checked? Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised how many people come and ask. And obviously you have to say no. But I think that more people would come forward. The more people come forward, the more harm reduction messaging you can give. We want everybody to come home safely at the end of the day. We all do collectively.
Yes.
Right. We don't want any tragedies. So, you know, having that front of house check-in, would be great, you know.
And again, you know, if it's still, there's no one single way to do this because there's many, many ways to do drug checking. Yeah. Your neighbors from the UK, they have festival checking. They also have, this wedding us, yes, postal system. Yeah. Also quite interesting. Yeah? We have office based testing. So there's all kinds of different ways you could do this, actually.
The wedding us one is really interesting. People put their drugs in the post.
Yeah.
It has a number, like a code on it.
Yeah.
It goes off. They keep their code, right? It goes off. My friend Josie tests it. She puts it up online. Mm. You can look it up. Like Wendy Noss is there.
You check
your number against that batch.
Yeah.
And then you find out, you know, what's actually in it. And it happens quite reasonably quickly. Obviously the postal service.
Yeah.
But isn't it? Yeah. Like, it's all of these little innovations.
Sure.
And we're not trying to, as you said, you want people to be safe. You want them to come home safe. You want to avoid tragedies. I also have to make the argument, because it's important we make this argument in Ireland, given the concept of our, half the thing we always go back to is the cost of these things. These things are cost effective. Mm. I mean, it's a lot cheaper to have people in one area that are taking, consuming their drugs if it's going to be Merchants Quay or it's going to be, whereas we could have ambulances dashing across the city trying to get to people. We have all of these hassles that we don't need. We can have, you know, so economically I'm right in saying this makes euros and cents as well as common sense.
There's different studies on different harm reduction interventions like drug consumption rooms and drug checking and things like that. But yes, broadly speaking, you save money in the system, pre-hospital emergency care, ambulances, etc., paramedics rushing around. You save money. You can be going off to other crises if you've got drug checking and other agencies working alongside each other.
But the thing is that it's now being hampered or hindered by moral views of people. So it's not about cost effectiveness or other things, but many people have this moral idea, oh, it's not good to use drugs. You know, it's not good to use drugs. So we should not support any initiative that could support them in using drugs. But once you come over that and you look at the evidence, which is built up in the recent decades, basically, you know, there's no other way to looking at these things that they work. They're effective, cost effective and effective anyway.
It's called the cost of spite.
Yeah, that's probably.
It is called the cost. It's a known term. It's the cost of spite. So you're actually doing something that is against your own pocket and against your thing because of out of spite. It's the whole, you know, don't give them a free house. Well, you know, that doesn't actually, no one gets a free house, but you know, and it's better off. And
just on the point, just something we talked about earlier, just quickly come back to the idea of sort of getting people housed and getting them in somewhere and then being, you know, being better or whatever the language is. Obviously we want to get people in off the streets and we want them to have their own front door. And I think collectively everybody wants to see that. For people who use drugs, there's then risk associated to that, where, you know, if you share a room with someone in a hostel and you're using, you've got an agreed protocol between each other to make sure each other are safe. Mm. Now you're in a room on your own or an apartment on your own. Mm. So it's, you know, you've got to think ahead about how to make sure that people are safe and put structures in. So, just a quick example. In Vancouver, where they have in downtown Eastside, they have a particular area that has huge problems. They've been very successful with the housing first approach. Mm. They've got people in. And during one winter recently, they started putting out fentanyl became a really big problem. People started to overdose and die. And they started to put up tents out in the street as sort of places where people could go and safely inject. I thought that was for people who were homeless. Mm. That was for people who had been housed. They were coming in. They were frightened of taking fentanyl in their apartments and dying because they didn't want to take fentanyl particularly, right? And they came out and they used outdoors. And then when someone was with them, and then they went back up because literally people were being found in apartments days later. God. You know, so we got to think about risk, you know, as we are successful in other ways.
And when we think about risk, it's also worth remembering that the vast majority of people who use drugs are doing it recreationally.
Exactly. And they're doing it only once or twice a year. So I can talk for this for hours, you know, but the thing is that, you know, there's only one way to do this work, and this is to monitor the market really good, to come up with, not with all kinds of estimates of people using drugs, but clear numbers. And we can do that, you know, we do that in the Netherlands. Instead of talking about, you know, I don't know, big ideas. No, it's, you have to measure exactly, and you can measure exactly what the nature of a problem is, you know, and as you say, most of the people who use drugs in any country, they do it in a recreational way. And only a few of them, they end up in big problems. And for those people, you need to have proper services. But we are talking about the problem in general, generally speaking, at least in the Netherlands, but I think elsewhere too. If people use drugs, they start maybe that with that, you know, with alcohol and tobacco, for, you know, when they get 14, 15, 16 years of age, then they may do some other drugs, heroin maybe, but not so much, maybe MDMA, ecstasy, some cocaine. And then when they grow up, when they turn 20, 22, they get a job, they get a wife, and they lose their interest in using anyway.
Right.
Yeah. And that's
there's
it.
But we talk about
you know, drugs being the demon that, you know, causes misery, and it causes misery, but you have to put it into perspective. Sure. Alcohol, tobacco causes much more problems. You know, in the Netherlands, 21,000 people directly die every year because of tobacco. If you look at heroin, people who overdose on heroin or die directly because of heroin, 100. So yeah. What we're talking about?
We had that conversation a couple of nights ago with a GP who we were talking about the issues, and he said when we brought up illicit drugs, and he said, "Well, actually, alcohol is a much bigger concern."
It
is.
I actually looked at it, and it's online. You can go and look at this. You can look at the effectiveness of alcohol and tobacco in comparison to other drugs programs over the years in Ireland and every country specifically within the EU. Mm-hmm. So I looked the other night. Tony says, I don't research, but I do.
It doesn't.
We've reduced alcohol deaths and we've reduced tobacco deaths simply by doing the same things you're trying to do now. We've done it. It's a tried and tested route. If you look at harm reduction and if you approach it from a harm reduction point of view, you can reduce the number of deaths. Nobody ever said, let's outright ban alcohol because we know it doesn't work. We've seen it doesn't work.
It just didn't work.
And tobacco, I mean, there's a huge, huge argument there that if you ban tobacco in the morning, it makes ultimate sense to ban tobacco in the morning. But we don't. And we don't because we recognize that people smoke. And we must also recognize that people take drugs. And they do take drugs. And there's no panacea, there's no magic wand that says stop taking drugs. That's not going to work. So you have to deal in realities. And realities is people. It's what you two guys do.
Yeah.
What's the hope, Tony?
From our perspective, that harm reduction initiatives expand and that we innovate, not just in Ireland, but from the European partnership perspective, I would hope to see drug checking in Ireland in a very meaningful way. I hope that we have a great model that comes out of the working group, please God. And that the supervised injection facility gets open as soon as possible.
The first one, one of many.
And it's been a battle royale. It's been a battle royale.
Yeah, Merchants Quay have been in the fray there, you know, and we're very much supportive of them.
You mentioned Lynn earlier, and I know she does a lot of work in this area as well. And she'd be very much of the mindset that we need, you know, let's get on to it. Let's just do it. There's a lot that we can do, and we need to start doing it. I think it's very good that you said the National Drug Strategy has a lot of good ideas.
Yeah.
Implementation. Yeah. Putting these things in place. Let's get cracking. The pressure is on now. It's and if you're around and you're talking and people are canvassing you and you're like us and you give a damn about it, raise it as an election issue. Say it, because I'm not happy when I hear of people objecting to these things when we know that it'll save lives. So let's be honest. We can all play our part. Not just you guys. We listeners, I'm telling you can all play your part here.
Well, I suppose the best way to put that is harm reduction. It's not just poor kids, it's your kids. Mm. You know, and exactly. That is the bottom line.
That's true.
Yeah, I just keep saying about the, you know, when your kids go out, you know, when they go out and they're heading off into the, and if, most of us have said, if you can't be good, be careful.
I just think
that, you know, the bit the harm reductionists take out of that is we take the good bit away. We say, if you're going to take risks, be careful, you know, because it's not good or bad. It just is.
Very good.
We think it's a very positive note, and we're delighted that you're over here actually talking to people in a way that can affect a change. We think that's great.
And I'm glad that you're such a big unit, because if there's anything, you'll take them out.
So, it's great to see. It's great to see that we have moved on somewhat. We still have a long way to go, but it's great to see some buy-in from government. It's great to see that buy-in. It's great to see Tony. We know your work is endless, non-stop, and it's great to have you over. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I hope to return in 5 years' time and to see that all of Ireland is filled with drug consumption rooms and drug checking services and just doing the work, which is then considered normal work.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'm going to plug the actual run that I'm doing with these guys. So I'm running 2,020 miles in 2020 to raise money for Anna Liffey. I've just passed, 130-odd miles so far. My legs are killing me. My knee is sore. My ankle is sore. It's on tortoiseshack.ie/run2020. Come on and click the donate button, guys, because please show me some support. Show me some love.
This is my opportunity to say thanks to Tony, because it is a phenomenal undertaking. And I did say to him, you should do kilometres rather than miles. I'm not sure why he chose miles. It's an imperialist's measurement.
It's a colonial.
We are Europeans. I do implore you to go to kilometres. No. For your sake of your knees, do kilometres.
No, it's a colonial mindset.
When Tony's finished this, they're going to sponsor me just to make it down the stairs and have a cigarette every morning.
I'll tell you, he did say to me, he said, run kilometres, not miles. And I said, any Egypt can run kilometres. You need a real Egypt to run the miles. Talk to y'all soon, folks. Bye-bye.